Hello, it's Owen Shehan here from Off The Ball, and the FIFA World Cup 2026 is here. And let's be honest, the matchday version of ourselves can look a little committed. Jerseys, face paint, scarves and questionable weather, whatever you have, maybe even a full costume if your team makes a run, you can look a little worse for wear come the end of it all. But the World Cup, it's not just about the football. It's the atmosphere, it's the nights in the pub, it is the watch parties with your mates, and maybe even meeting someone new. That is where Lynx comes in. As an official personal care sponsor of the FIFA World Cup 2026, Lynx's premium fragrances are here to help you smell your best, even in the middle of full matchday madness. Lynx, smell your best when you look your worst. Now, enjoy your podcast.
Off The Ball Rugby.
There is a lot of scrutiny. There's a bit of fear that maybe they're over the top and that we don't have enough players coming through. And a lot of that stuff is justified at times, but they keep bouncing back and common denominator here is far.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
The News Round is brought to you by Viagra Connect 50 milligram film coated tablets.
Contains sildenafil for adult men with erectile dysfunction. Maximum dosage 150 milligram tablet per day. Always read the label. Buy online at viagraconnect.ie. Subject to suitability following pharmacist consultation.
Welcome along. It is Wednesday's Off The Ball. It is Will O'Callaghan with you. We've got a packed show between now and 10 p.m. Later this hour, we're going to be joined by Carol O'Kane, who primarily covers Ulster GAA, and we thought, hey, it's the best time to get him in. There's no Ulster team in the All-Ireland football semi-finals for the first time in a decade. But of course, he's been watching all the rest of the championship as well. Stephen Rochard, former Mayo boss, ahead of Mayo's game against Louth. That is a very unique matchup in the last four of the All-Ireland football championship. Less unique is a repeat of the All-Ireland final from 3 years ago. We've got Kerry against Dublin fighting it out for a place. Kerry, many people's favourite, to lift Sam Maguire for a 40th time this summer. Football show, we've got a real treat. Carla Ward's going to be sitting down with us for more than half an hour to chat about her first 18 months in charge of the team. The World Cup campaign that came up just a little bit short in the end against Grenoble, against France, but still feeling that Ireland can qualify for Brazil next summer if they can navigate two rounds of the playoffs later this year. And Susanna Mullen's going to be with us because Leinster have got this very innovative program at the moment where they've been going, sending players two per year for the last two seasons over to Melbourne to learn from the rugby league team over there as opposed to rugby union. She'll be telling us why, and she's been speaking to some of the players, including Casper Gabriel, the Leinster out half, who is currently in Melbourne, not playing rugby league, but learning from the Melbourne Knights rugby league team, and why some of those players are going to be coming to Dublin as part of that exchange as well. Delighted to say, Arthur D is here with me. How are you, Arthur?
Flying.
And Eve Conway is here. How are you, Eve?
I'm all good.
Wimbledon. I thought about this last night, right, because you're a massive Wimbledon fan.
Mm-hmm.
Today, and this has happened every 2 days because the way the draw is, it almost feels like you've got all of the major seeds playing on one day and then kind of the big names disappear for the next one. So I was absorbed naturally by Djokovic last night. I think by the end count, was it 5 hours, 17 minutes by the end of it?
It was definitely over 5 hours, which is intense for grass court tennis, especially.
Yeah, and especially if you're Djokovic, who's roughly the same age as me. And when you see him reasonably cranky at the point that the roof was being closed, and then I thought, all right, this is surely over. And then Phil Egan sent me a message and said, the BBC are doing the strangest thing possible. They have cancelled the 10 o'clock news because Djokovic is still in court. And he was still there for another hour after that. He was still there after 11. I was not particularly watching the Colombia-Switzerland game, which is wonderfully called Charlie versus the Chocolate Factory, which is one of the most amazing monikers I've heard. I wish I'd stolen it for the football show last night. But I was wrapped up watching this.
Well, I feel like when you have a boring enough World Cup game, it's nice to have a very exciting five-set Wimbledon clash. And I know there's a lot of talks about, you know, should the men's and women's tennis at Grand Slams both be five sets? But I'm very much of the opinion that it's in the second week when the five-setters finally get good, because you have these really high-quality opposition coming up against each other. Mm. And for Novak Djokovic to be doing what he's doing at the age that he is, and have been, obviously he doesn't really play a lot of the warm-up tournaments anymore. He kind of just turns up for the Grand Slams. But to be in your late 30s and still to be pulling out performances like that and doing it consistently year after year, it's remarkable.
Yeah, rolling out of bed is tricky in your late 30s. Whatever about the idea of playing a five-hour tennis match? I think Sinner, there is that feeling, Eve, the Sinner's just going to go through him now?
Well, the downside to playing these long five-set matches is that you need to play, you know, in 2 days' time. Mm. And you don't have the recovery time to kind of get your body back to where it should be. And if he comes up against Sinner in the final or Zverev in the next couple of rounds, you're at a disadvantage immediately. I mean Zverev coming off a French Open win and then Sinner kind of coming off leaving the French Open very early and having something to prove.
Yeah, we'll talk about the rest of Wimbledon, what's happened today. But yeah, all the big seeds were out yesterday in that one. The World Cup, Arthur, I said 24 hours ago, we're just coming off the back of Messi mania and him crying on the pitch after that win and so on. I can take one bad game. Colombia-Switzerland last night was a bit of a bore.
Yeah.
But given the way that this round of 16 has gone, and now we've got the quarterfinal lineup the way it is, and maybe we get France and Spain in the last four. England are going to be intriguing on the other side of the draw as well. Maybe we get the Red Tops talking about the Falklands again if England play against Argentina. This is very nicely set up for the weekend.
Yeah, I don't mind the boring games. I think there's a certain penance.
They make you appreciate
They do. They make you appreciate the good ones. Because I watched that last night. I watched that, well, as much as we could when we get out of here. There was something to it. I like it. There's so much on the line. And I think that's the nature of two teams who probably aren't going to win. I mean, they probably know that. But I can become absorbed in it. In the same way that the idea of 5.5 hours of a singular tennis match is entirely too long. Like, you know what I mean? But like each to one's own. it's been a strange old day not having any World Cup fixtures, even on, you know, on your scoring app, and you're like, nothing there, what's wrong? So it's kind of a sad old day, but look, the break isn't too long. This time tomorrow we'll be back all in the thick of it again. I'm happier for it.
Yeah, I've welcomed it, you know, because I kind of went, this is like, you just get a chance to just clean the palate a little bit today, and then Morocco and France will come round. You determine how late you want to stay up Friday into the early hours of Saturday. You're probably going to rock all the way around to Sunday, and then bang, the semi-finals hit you straight away at the start of next week. So I was saying to Lauren, who's on video today, like, it is effectively relentless now.
The World Cup?
Yeah.
Yeah.
In a good way. Like, it's literally, oof. And then next thing, big game after big game.
It's a different kind of relentlessness, because in the early rounds, it was more relentless for the viewer who's trying to watch every single game. And now it's actually relentless in terms of results for the teams, where you have these gaps between games, but suddenly everything means so much more.
Yeah. Oh, look, I'm glad I've paced myself in the tournament. Ben was saying last night he's missed. I think it was like, the only reason he missed some of the games is because they were happening simultaneously in the last round of matches. And he was trying to watch everything. But he's pretty much set up for everything. The only one he fell asleep for was maybe the Ghana game after Cape Verde in Argentina, which is understandable after you've sat through extra time and then the 3 a.m. gives us a non-runner for you. I've been more selective and I've decided, let's just pace myself. When we get to quarterfinal weekend and into semi-final week and then the final on the 19th, which could be one of those great sporting days, All-Ireland hurling final, the Open, and also the World Cup final on the same day. Oof. And Ringman Rangers friendly on the same day too.
And the Belgian Grand Prix.
Wow. giving away your own bias.
Don't push your agenda. Yeah.
The F1 pod recorded earlier today. Who's on the F1 pod this week? Go on, get your free plug in while you do it.
It's Ronan O'Hare from County Down, who is Ollie Bearman's race engineer with Haas.
Is it just me, or are there a lot of, and I appreciate we're including the entire island of Ireland when I say this, a lot of Irish people appear to be involved in F1 right now?
Very much so. I think the engineering courses in both colleges, kind of in Dublin, up in Ulster as well, produce a lot of very talented people who end up working in the factories. So many of them are based in the UK. So we're seeing a lot of Irish engineering assets over there now.
Okay, because I remember Bernie Collins said a few years ago, she thought that this was going to become almost an increasing trend. We talked about a few of them were getting into teams, and she was like, there's loads involved in Formula 2, and they'll eventually know more so than the drivers make a step up into the parent teams by the end of it. So that will be a really good chat. That is available right now, I assume?
Tomorrow.
Yes.
Got to keep you waiting, you know?
Giving away the process here of how things are recorded on a Wednesday but don't get released till Thursday. Let's kick off the news then, because we've got plenty to get through here. Tell us first of all, Ben is down at the EGM at the moment. It is being held in cameras, so he'll have to wait until the end to get reaction from it, but hopefully we can bring you some news on the bulletins, particularly later on tonight, depending how long this goes for. But bring us up to speed on what's happening at this EGM.
Yeah, so the FAI are hosting an extraordinary general meeting this evening to vote on whether to endorse the fulfilment of Ireland's Nations League games against Israel this autumn. So the home game against Israel was originally supposed to be played in Dublin, but has been moved to a neutral venue in Serbia on October 4th. There has been increasing political pressure on the FAI as the Stop the Game campaign continues to call for the fixtures to be cancelled. The proposal tonight will be put to a secret ballot of 138 delegates. If the fixtures are not played, the FAI say there will be a financial blow of around 10 million euro and a loss of 6 points, which would likely result in relegation to League C of the Nations League. And then today, Dublin MEP Aidan O'Riordan was speaking, and he believes that these games should be boycotted. He's told journalists in Strasbourg that by not playing the games, it would give more self-confidence to other footballing associations to not play fixtures against Israel.
Well, look, I'm a football fan. I understand where the FAI are coming from. They didn't want this problem. This problem should have been dealt with at a FIFA and UEFA level. Although we've all seen that FIFA are so irredeemably corrupt that it's impossible for them to, any the high-ranking FIFA officials to lie straight in bed, never mind make a decision that's based on morality. UEFA should have definitely made this decision for the FAI. They shouldn't be involved in international competition, similar to Russia. When it came to it, I was hoping that the Irish government might intervene as it did in 1999 when the Yugoslavian visiting team weren't afforded visas. They can't do that anymore because the game is going to be played in Serbia. I would hope that the FAI would bow to, I think, what I feel is the will of football fans, who understand more than anybody else the implications of not playing these games and the loss of the 6 points and the potential ramifications for hosting the European Championships in 2028. But when you hear the presentations that are made here and in Brussels, week in, week out, from people who now feel that they're not being heard anymore, and we have a debate today on Gaza only because the S&D have demanded it. There used to be a monthly debate on Gaza here, and we haven't had one in, I think, six or eight months, because it's gone off the agenda, because people don't care enough about it. And Ireland, when you take a leadership position on an issue such as Palestine, well, then you have to go the whole hog. And I think there sometimes comes a moment in history where one country does something, or one football association does something, that gives other people the space and the bravery to do the same. And I think if these games weren't to go ahead, because we understood the implications and the knock-on effects, we didn't play the games anyway, it would give, I feel, more self-confidence to other football associations, such maybe as Norway or Spain or others, to also just not be willing to play games against Israel.
Hello, it's Owen Chahan here from Off The Ball, and the FIFA World Cup 2026 is here. And let's be honest, the matchday version of ourselves can look a little committed. Jerseys, face paint, scarves in questionable weather, whatever you have, maybe even a full costume if your team makes a run, you can look a little worse for wear come the end of it all. But the World Cup, it's not just about the football. It's the atmosphere, it's the nights in the pub, it is the watch parties with your mates, and maybe even meeting someone new. That is where Lynx comes in. As an official personal care sponsor of the FIFA World Cup 2026, Lynx's premium fragrances are here to help you smell your best, even in the middle of full matchday madness. Lynx, smell your best when you look your worst. Now, enjoy your podcast.
So the temperature coming out of this is the FAI appear to be fairly confident that they will be supported in the motion, that the motion will be rejected when it eventually goes through tonight. So, like, very clear, there's four or five bodies who are going to speak up. The President, Paul Cook, and Tony Kyuan, who wrote as chair on behalf of the FAI board, had sent out the reason that they have rejected the boycotting of the upcoming fixtures. And as Eve has mentioned, the direct revenue cost, which was brought up, was 5.5 million. And we brought you Kieran Nugent's numbers, why he was not necessarily tallying with the idea that it would be a likely financial loss of 10.3, which is a figure that was contained within that letter that was sent to the delegates. And partly the reason for that is that the home fans and the money that would have been generated at the Aviva Stadium are already gone, because this game goes to Serbia. It's going to be behind closed doors. So you can't really argue about the lost revenue in that regard. But obviously there's potential fines, and it takes into account the words likely, which do a lot of heavy lifting when it comes to this letter that's been sent out, which is the likely relegation, the likely sanctions of the 6 points, and then the likely loss of 10 million. And naturally, they say as well that it would do damage further down the line at competitions at senior and underage level particularly. I'm surprised that there wasn't a mention around the hosting of Euro 2028 as a part of this as well. But the FAI, have been reasonably clear in their position that they feel these games must go ahead, and that's the position they're in. I don't know how the vote goes, and I don't want to guess ahead of this, Arthur. And we've been, as I mentioned, is down there at the moment. And because this is happening in camera, we won't hear what the delegates say on the floor. So it'll be whatever comes out afterwards. We're expecting that the FAI will do a top table press conference at the end of it and probably say where their position is to go from here. My suspicion would be, with the votes and the bodies that the FAI probably already have on board, this probably gets defeated. But it has come a long way in the fact that this is still being discussed now in July, when we kind of thought in February that the FAI had batted it away initially.
100%. And the rehoming of the games themselves felt like, I definitely, there was a sense around that sort of death knell to it, that that's, well, that's that. That's all sussed away now. So to your point, and I think probably the nature and manner in which it's being carried out behind closed doors, I don't suspect if it does, if it falls the way you're kind of just generally expected tonight, I can't see that stopping the momentum at all of those trying to stop the game.
Yeah.
Why would you? It's still a, you know, yeah, why would you?
Yeah, the other thing that was reported earlier today is that this is effectively an instructive vote by the end of it as well. So the FAI could still decide to not play them, even though maybe, say, a small majority, if it was enough disagreement from the floor. So I think we just have to wait and see what happens. But I think this will continue to be on the agenda. Obviously, this vote is very important because an EGM has been called on the back of it. So this is a very formal process for the FAI. And also, essentially, the supporters groups who are some of their biggest supporters. Vinny and I ended up chatting for about 10 minutes in studio after the football show last night, but a lot of those supporters, the ones who buy season tickets, they're the ones who go to the away games. They're probably the most loyal, I would say, of the fans, and there is very much a large majority of those supporters who are against the idea of the game going forward. That is obviously fed down to their delegates. That's a group where it's difficult for the FAI. We very much want to keep them on side, but they're against the idea of these fixtures taking place. So we shall see what happens later. The World Cup action last night, we kind of alluded to it already. So who's gone through to the last eight?
So after the rollercoaster that was Argentina versus Egypt, the later kickoff was Switzerland against Colombia, which was, as you said, the last of the World Cup round of 16 matches. It was 0-0 after both 90 minutes and extra time. So the game was decided on penalties, with Switzerland winning 4-3. This result means that Switzerland have reached the quarterfinals of the World Cup for the first time since 1954, when they were hosts. And then they'll face Argentina in the early hours of Sunday morning in Kansas.
Okay. Tell us a bit more about Egypt, because this was kind of a strange end to it. So we were coming in there just as this happened. So I didn't have sound in the studio. So I kind of was watching it all play out as we were about to start. But particularly around the Egypt manager, some of the actions at the end of it, the cards at the end of it. So what are Egypt looking for now?
So Egyptian FA president Abu Rida has called for an investigation after last night's World Cup defeat to Argentina. He wants a probe into the entire team of on-field referees and video technology referees that worked on the match, which Egypt lost 3-2. The Egyptian FA believe that blatant errors were made and that footage in favour of the Egyptian national team was not reviewed. VAR had ruled out an Egyptian goal by Mustafa Zico due to a foul in the lead-up on Lisandro Martinez, and Zico went so far as to claim that this tournament has been fixed. The Egyptian FA have called for a match official to be excluded from that World Cup, and it's lodged an official complaint.
Yeah, I don't know what your take is on this. One that jumped out for me as well is VAR didn't look at Mo Salah potentially being fouled way up the field before the winning goal for Argentina as well.
Yeah, blood's up. I'd be very cynical about the prospect of widespread fixing. I just don't know if I'd...
Or just claim that Messi is being, you know, given a path to win the World Cup.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't necessarily buy that. Look, no more than our own scenario on Sunday with the... Obviously, you don't have VAR in hurling, but the Nicky Quaid thing, and where it's like, oh, there the wrong decision was made. But it's kind of a falsehood to suggest that one wrong decision means every other decision was right. So like, there's loads of wrong decisions made in matches. There's loads of things that could be brought back to look at. There's loads of things that, oh, well, if you brought that to make a foul, what happens? And like, there's innumerable things, the way this can play out. And I think just sometimes, I suppose people don't get the results they want. But the notion that you'd punish the whole group of referees or match officials or whatever because the result didn't suit you, and even if you have legitimate cause to be upset, but like, I see this being given sort of probably the shortest shrift.
I think so too. As much as Argentina got out of jail, I don't think the officials were trying to do Egypt last night.
In whose benefit? I know, and there's so much stuff that comes up afterwards, and the same clip was everywhere about the was it a trip on Mo Salah in the box, where it was like, if you just break everything down to its composite parts, and it's kind of like, I never checked this, I can't believe this, it's a fix. But like, millions of things like that happen all the time. Like, it's just, it's I'm sure it's incredibly frustrating for them. But in a little bit like Sunday as well, I do feel that they had their fate in their own hands. They were 2-0 up.
Yeah, 100%.
With like 15 minutes to go or whatever it was, yeah. And lost 3-2.
And it was still 2-1 up with 11 minutes to go as well.
Yeah. If the fix was in, I kind of suspect maybe, why be so dramatic about it? It's like, why go with such flourish, you know?
Yeah. I also, like, as much as I've criticised FIFA quite a bit in the chair over the last couple of nights, I genuinely don't think the FIFA, it's too big to rig the World Cup. This idea that while the entire world is watching you, that you would go, you know what, we're actually going to find a way to make sure that Messi and Argentina get
to what end? Like, yeah. what's the... Like,
Messi's already won the World Cup. Argentina have already done this.
Like, it's not like Argentina's not the... It's not the biggest market in the world, therefore. Like, I don't.
No.
I mean, if it was trying to be rigged in any way, shape, or form, the Balogun red card being overturned and then the USA just completely crashing out goes to show. It probably wouldn't work anyway.
Yeah, so. Exactly. I mean, again, we'll talk about Balogun a little bit later on the football show as well and all of the circumstances around that. Because something I wasn't aware until I read it earlier today was that I didn't know that Pochettino's wages were being paid by a private investor.
Oh, yeah.
All very Leinster rugby when we talked to Sam McDawson weeks ago about James Lowe. But it's two or three hedge fund guys who have got crazy money. I've decided to pay most of the 6 million, like Dennis O'Brien and Martin O'Neill, as would have previously happened. And they're funding that. Hmm. But also one of the guys who was involved in the potential legal case against FIFA was one of the backers of Pochettino. And he is also friends with the Commerce Secretary in the USA as well. So we talk about government interference and not government interference. The Commerce Secretary was getting his legal team ready to take a case if Balogun wasn't cleared. Like, I don't know exactly how FIFA can't argue this isn't government intervention, which goes directly against their own rules. But Gianni Infantino likes going to the White House. Fire ahead, my friend. Premier Division action tonight, including the reigning champions are in action tonight.
They are. So there's two games tonight in the SSE Electricity Women's Premier Division. So third place Shelburne travel to second place Athlone Town this evening. Athlone are yet to lose a game under new manager Lily Ag, while Shelburne haven't lost a game since their 5-2 defeat to Shamrock Rovers in March. And then elsewhere tonight, Piemont United, who have lost their last four league games, host DLR Waves, who are second from bottom. The game in Athlone kicks off in a few minutes' time at 7:30, while Piemont's fixture gets underway at 7:45.
London City Lionesses have flashed the cash a bit when it comes to, you know, women's footballers getting a big wage to come to the club. But this next signing is the biggest they've ever made.
Probably the biggest in the WSL. Yeah. So two-time Ballon d'Or winner Alexia Putellas has signed for WSL side London City Lionesses after leaving Barcelona. She'd been with Barcelona since 2012 and made 350 appearances, scoring 156 goals. And she was also a part of Spain's World Cup winning side in 2023. So Putellas joins former England goalkeeper Mary Earps at the Women's Super League side after she signed earlier this summer.
We're going to go to a break now in a second, but before that, let's go to West London then, because Fulham have finally announced their new manager.
They have, and they've appointed former Liverpool and Real Madrid defender Alvaro Arbeloa as their new head coach. The 43-year-old replaces Marco Silva at Craven Cottage on a 3-year deal. Arbeloa, of course, took over as interim manager of Real Madrid last season after Xabi Alonso's sacking, and this will be Arbeloa's first senior full-time managerial job after managing the Real Madrid youth and reserve teams from 2020 to 2025.
All right, plenty to come, including a change in management with the Offaly footballers, which we'll talk about just after the break. The news round is brought to you by Viagra Connect. 50-milligram film-coated tablets contains sildenafil. It is for adult men with erectile dysfunction. Maximum dosage is 1 50-milligram tablet per day. Always read the label. You need to buy online at viagraconnect.ie, and it is subject to suitability following a consultation with a pharmacist. Let's take a quick break. Back in a second.
The news round is brought to you by Viagra Connect 50-milligram film-coated tablets. Contains sildenafil for adult men with erectile dysfunction. Maximum dosage 1 50-milligram tablet per day. Always read the label. Buy online at viagraconnect.ie. Subject to suitability following pharmacist consultation.
So, welcome back to Wednesday's news round. We will have Stephen Rochford, who is the head football coach with the Offaly senior football champions Tullamore, who won their first game in the championship at the weekend. It is Offaly, though, Eve, who are looking for a new senior football manager because their joint managers have left.
They have. So Declan Kelly and Mickey Hart have stepped down from their roles as joint senior football managers at Offaly. Kelly have been at the helm since 2023, with Hart joining the setup from 2024. Offaly's season ended this year with defeat to Wicklow in the Tailteann Cup semi-finals. And in a statement from the county board this evening, they wished Declan, Mickey, head coach Luke Bree and all of the management and backroom team every success and happiness in the future.
12 months, a long time in football.
Go on.
Last year, so much excitement after the Division 3 final, after going back up to Division 2. The summer after that wasn't too bad either. There was kind of this feeling that there was lots to build on, and it felt like they were moving in a very good direction. Obviously, I remember on this very show, we talked about how it was slightly strange when Mickey Hart came in for the 2025 season, because Declan Kelly had won the All-Ireland Under-20 Championship back in 2021. Mm-hmm. And by that steam, he'd been appointed as the manager, and quite a few of those players were coming through to the senior team. And it made, I think, perfect sense to go internal when a candidate was available in the county that seemed in the right place. Declan, I think, would admit himself, he had a rocky enough start as senior football manager. And then you bring in one of the greatest managers of all time, you know, multiple All-Ireland winner with Tyrone, to be on your shoulder. And throughout the last few years, there has been this very conscious effort to make it clear that it's been Declan Kelly and Mickey Hart as a double act. And then Luke Bree very much became the football coach as part of this coaching ticket as well, down to the point that Mickey Hart and Declan Kelly, I think for the first, at least the first year of them being in charge, had to do every press conference and every press event together, which always seemed a little bit weird as well. I think that kind of broke down a little bit towards the end of the championship this year. Division 2 was miserable, and I do appreciate that a lot of that was probably down to injuries and players not being available, and Kieran Burke goes to Australia, and they just lose a load of people along the way. Or sorry, Killian Burke, who goes to Australia. And then that's never going to be easy, but they lost soundly across the board in the National Football League, got relegated down to Division 3, were then quite soundly beaten by Laois in the Championship and dropped down to the Tailteann. And up onto about 45 minutes into the game against Wicklow in the semi-final, it appeared that Offaly had actually salvaged their year. They had beaten Down in the group stages, they had beaten Clare, support levels were still reasonably low. I think supporters had kind of lost a little bit of confidence in the team for this season. And then they absolutely blew a 9-point lead away in the semi-final. And I was shocked when Mickey Hart said after the game, down below the Cusack Sand, that he was interested in staying for another year. I genuinely thought that this was a long time coming. The statement that's come out from the two of them today, I was sure they were both gone pretty much directly after the Wicklow game. So I was intrigued to see what happened. I'm surprised it actually went on for a few weeks after that. But sometimes things that may have been good at one point in the run just come to an end.
So what do they do now? It's got to be made harder by the fact that Leinster's more open than it's been in years, and your neighbours are all achieving incredible success.
So an Offaly County Board official said to me at the weekend, the biggest killer is that Offaly had appeared a few years ago, particularly with the underage teams they're bringing through, that they'd gone ahead in Westmead. And now Westmead have had this dream summer where things weren't necessarily expected. And Westmead is such a mess last year. I know it'll be done to Ryan McHugh tomorrow, but like Mark McHugh goes in very difficult circumstances whereby Cavan's appointment of Dermot Cabe went really, really long. Yeah. And it put them in this really unfortunate position. And then a load of players had retired over the last kind of 2 years for Westmeath as well. I would have never anticipated if you said to me, John Heston's going to be coming back in just before a Leinster final. Westmeath will turn over the dubs after extra time.
Yeah.
And they'll play some of the most remarkable football and the most dramatic games of the summer. As an Offaly person, as someone who lives not too far from the Westmeath border, I've wished them well, but it has been slightly bizarre watching this happen. And you watch on with certain green eyes where Offaly have been getting ready for the Tailteann. It certainly doesn't make it any easier when you see Westmeath going really well. Also to see Louth being as excellent as they have been for the last 2 years. It shows what can be achieved, particularly when it feels that Dublin are no longer the juggernaut that can't be toppled anymore within Leinster. And Offaly haven't really kicked on since 2021, but to your point, I don't necessarily know who the next manager is going to be, but I think they probably will look to try and get a manager to try and bring them forward with the new rules a little bit as well.
Fair.
But again, that's for other people to work out. I have no idea who that person is. But sometimes it just feels like if the two guys had stayed around for another season, I'm not sure there would have been an uptick of form going back into Division 3. So from that point of view, I think it makes sense for them to leave. We mentioned Wimbledon earlier. What's been happening on the course today?
Yep. So it was quarterfinals day in SW19, and there have been some shock results on centre court. So 2024 runner-up Jasmine Paolini was defeated in straight sets by Marta Kostyuk, who was making her centre court debut. Kostyuk has now made consecutive Grand Slam semi-finals. She had lost her Roland Garros semi-final to eventual champion Mira Andreeva. And then elsewhere, Linda Noskova beat Elise Martens 6-3, 7-5. Then the later game on centre saw British wild card Arthur Ferry defeat Roland Garros runner-up Flavio Caboli in straight sets 6-4, 7-6, 6-love. Ferry becomes the first British wildcard and fifth British man overall to reach the singles semi-finals at Wimbledon in the Open era. He'll face Roland Garros champion Alexander Zverev in the next round after Zverev defeated Taylor Fritz in straight sets 6-4, 6-4, 6-2. And then after her win today, Marta Kostyuk spoke about the unpredictable nature of grass, which allows for these shock results.
For sure, I'm better on clay. 100%. As I said, I think grass is very unpredictable. And we see a lot of... I always see these stats whenever someone's losing. It's like, whoever won in Paris didn't make it past second week, I don't know, for 10 years in a row or whatever the stat is. Or like the defending champion didn't make it past third round in a long time, or this kind of stats. So I don't know. I feel like for everyone, grass is pretty unpredictable. Of course, there are players who are really good at it, but I feel like majority are still, you know, it's up and down for everyone.
Ferry's kind of a magic story, isn't it? Because I remember over the course of a couple of days here, it was the Brits are tumbling at Wimbledon and he was the only one left. And it was, he's a wild card and not a huge amount is expected. And I know he was on that side of the draw where there was a few, you know, favourable matches that could happen. But for him to go all the way to the last four is serious going.
I mean, he's making his debut in the top 100, top 90, top 80, top 60, top 70 and top 40 now with this result. Wow. Should he win the whole tournament, I think he breaks into the top 15. And there's been a lot of talk about Ferry's kind of upbringing. Like his father is like a multimillionaire from France and he grew up and he went to school in Wimbledon. So he's very much from that neck of the woods. But similar in a way to Emma Navarro, like on the women's side, when you have this unimaginable wealth, you have all these opportunities, but you also need to back it up with a fair amount of talent to get to where he is. And he's kind of on a probably career best streak so far, which is so impressive to do as a British player at Wimbledon because the media pressure there. I mean, we saw Emma Raducanu, obviously a bit younger than Ferry is now, when she first broke through. By the fourth round at Wimbledon, they put her on centre. Mm. Every camera and every microphone in the vicinity was pointed at her and she really struggled with that. I think Ferry's handling it very well. He'll play Zverev in the next round. Zverev's had a pretty comfortable ride of it so far, similar to his French Open victory, not really faced anyone too highly ranked, but what he is coming up against in the semi-final will be Ferry with all the momentum and the entire crowd on his side.
Literally. Yeah, literally. I mean, Zverev's not the most popular player anyway. Nope. But Adeleke is not going to run this weekend.
She isn't. So Rashida Adeleke has withdrawn from Friday's Monaco Diamond League. The 24-year-old was scheduled to compete in the women's 400 metres, but is no longer listed among the entries. She had made a return from injury to competitive action in Oregon last week, and she finished ninth, clocking a time of 52.26 seconds, which is 3 seconds outside her personal best. She now faces a battle to secure qualification for next month's European Championships in Birmingham. She must hit the 51.20 second standard before the qualification deadline of July 26th.
Okay, many thanks, Steve, for joining us on the News Round. We keep you up to date on the bulletins here on News Talk throughout the evening as well. No World Cup, but we should have news from that EGM a little bit later on tonight as well. The West is very much awake, and I know Stephen Rush is going to be with us in a few minutes to talk about football. But we've got another massive roadshow coming west of the Shannon as well, which you can keep an eye on later this month. And it's got an excellent lineup as well. John Duggan and Johnny Ward are going to be alongside special guests Joe Canning and Barry Geraghty. What a crew to be able to put together for our Galway Races special for an evening of racing insight, tips and crack. And I've been told as well that Joe Canning is a part owner of a horse. So not only will he be able to talk about the hurling on the night, but he's got an interest in horse racing too. We'll be live at Mary Mullins Pub on the 28th of July. We will look ahead to all the action at the Galway Races with thanks to William Hill. You can get your tickets for the Racing Pod live at offtheball.com/events. We're going to take a short break. Carol Kane, Stephen Rochford with us to talk Gaelic football on the far side.
The News Round is brought to you by Viagra Connect 50 milligram film coated tablets. Contains sildenafil for adult men with erectile dysfunction. Maximum dosage 150 milligram tablet per day. Always read the label. Buy online at viagraconnect.ie. Subject to suitability following pharmacist consultation.